On this episode of the High Stakes Success Podcast, we're headed to the rodeo where tough cowboys put it all on the line, riding bulls that weigh over 1 ton for purses in the tens of thousands of dollars. How do they deal with the pressure and how do they survive the competition? Let's find out now. Hey guys, here we are on this episode of the High Stakes Success Podcast, and today we have a really awesome guest. It is Scott Schiffner. He is a bull rider, and he has been voted Cowboy of the Year here in Canada, as well as a bunch of accolades, including Olympic bronze medalist and so much more. So we are now joined by Mr. Schiffner. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys today?
Doing very good, thank you. I was looking over your bio, I was looking over your list of accomplishments, and it seems you're basically the most prolific bull rider in Canada. Would that be safe to say?
Well, I don't know about that, but I always say I'm one of the oldest ones in Canada right now, still getting on. So the longer you're around a sport, more opportunities you get to win things and accomplish things. So I've been pretty fortunate that I've been healthy this long to keep at it.
Right. Yeah, you've got a long list of accomplishments. And you were mentioning that you were the oldest one still doing it right now. But you don't look very old to me at all.
Well, thank you. I'm actually 37. I was just 37 in April. And in the bull riding world, that's getting pretty old. Most guys at a professional level like this usually are 30, 33, 34 is kind of the max. So I've kind of surpassed that. And just mostly our body just doesn't hold up to what we put it through. So this is my 20th year professional.
Wow. So now when it comes to that aspect of the bull riding game, is that because there's a lot of injuries in the sport? It's really hard on your body. Is there concussions and things like that as well? And how dangerous is the sport?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In our sport, it's, you know, there's an old saying, it's not when you get hurt, it's when and how bad. And the biggest issue that we've had for years and years is, unlike other professional sports, we don't always have sports medicine doctors on call and team doctors and that. So the biggest issue is lots of times I get injured in a small injury in that, and then I jump in my car or truck or whatever, and we drive 12, 13 hours to the next one. So by the time we get to the next one, that injury that was pretty minor has now become pretty somewhat major because, you know, we didn't get it dealt with. We didn't get rather be massage or, you know, our best friend's ice. So over the years, it's just takes wear and tear on your body for sure.
Wow. So have you been fortunate enough that you haven't sustained that many big injuries and that's why you're still able to keep doing it?
I think to a certain extent, I've been like, I'm going to give you a list of my injuries, and I think I've been very lucky. And
okay.
Roll your eyes and that. But, but you know, probably my major injury that, and we always judge our injuries on not necessarily how life-threatening they are or how bad they are. It's how long we're at a competition, right?
Like okay, yeah.
Professional athlete. So probably the worst one I ever had was I broke my femur off, and which is the biggest bone in your body. And that put me sidelined for 6.5 months. And
wow.
In a lot of cases, everybody thought that was exceptional, that I was back within 6.5 months. But that 6.5 months without getting on a bull, without getting paid, and sometimes your endorsement deals start to hinder because of that. But, you know, so that's one of the major injuries I've had. And then, you know, tore my PCL out on my knee, tore my bicep off of my arm. You know, I actually broke my jaw and lost some teeth in that, but luckily I'm married to a dental hygienist, so that got better, fixed better. So,
convenient.
But it's one of them things that, them are all injuries, but in my career, I consider myself lucky and haven't had too major of injuries, but yet I've had to deal with all those.
So are you thinking of winding things down soon, or are you just going to keep going for as long as your body lets you?
Well, there's three things, and in my age now, that's a $1 million question. Every time I do an interview or some reporter asks, you know, retirement, when's it on? And there's three things that play into that. You know, obviously my health and if my body can keep handling it. As long as I'm winning and not embarrassing myself, I don't want to show up and do it just to say I'm a bull rider. I want to show up and do it to win. And as long as myself, I'm having fun and doing it. You know, if any of those three things leave, I'll be pretty close to follow suit.
Right. Now, you were mentioning about sponsors before and how some of them will start to drop off if maybe you're out of the game for too long. I noticed, I've seen a lot of photos of you and videos of your competitions, and I noticed that you do have some pretty big time sponsors. How much does that play a role in the sport and in being able to, you know, continue doing the sport and making a living from it?
Well, for me now, it's huge. You know, it's because I've really kind of tightened up what I do now. I stay in Canada mostly. I don't really travel to the States and that too much. So the money becomes a little bit less, obviously, because I'm not opening to the big shows in the States and that. But when I can get them endorsement deals like I have and have good relations with them, it sure does take the pressure off. You know, I've got some really good ones like, you know, ATB Financial and different ones like that stick with me through thick and thin, and they make my life a lot easier, that's for sure. And you know, it's one of them things that I've been pretty fortunate. I've been one of the few professional bull riders in Canada to strictly make a living at it for years and years, and them are one of the big things that helped me for sure.
Wow. Now tell me the story of how you got started in bull riding. What inspired you to get into it as a professional?
You know, the biggest thing is I was around rodeo growing up. My dad did it, my family did it, but always at a very amateur level, and actually they roped and did stuff like that. So I roped quite a bit when I was a little kid, and one day we were roping and I was just little, and I convinced all the adults there to let me ride some of the team roping cattle that we were roping. And I thought that was way cooler than roping them. And, you know, and it's one of them things, it's the persona of being a bull rider is kind of like, you know, you can be a country and Western singer and be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can be badass AC/DC. And that's right. What I wanted to be, right? And that's the bull rider, right?
Right.
So I just kind of carried on as in the steer riding and rolled on through it into the bull riding and just never looked back. And I realized I was all right at it. I've seen hundreds and hundreds of kids and that throughout my career that got more talent in their pinky finger than I do in my whole body. But I wanted it worse than they did. And it's like that in any professional sport. The guys with the most talent necessarily don't always succeed. It's the guys that want it worse.
Right. Now, tell me, what does it take to succeed at bull riding? And what are the exact rules? How long do you have to stay on the bull? And what are the rules, the other rules as well?
You know, that's what's great about bull riding. It's one of the simplest things in the world. It's we have to stay on for 8 seconds.
Okay.
That is it. From the time the bull leaves the chute and what we call his front shoulder clears the plane of the gate, the time starts, and I have to still be on him at 8 seconds. And after, within that 8 seconds, I can't touch the animal at any time with my free hand. We all have to ride one-handed.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You can ride right or left-handed. One hand always has to stay in the air. You can't touch yourself or the animal. And other than that, there's a few other little rules just based on cheating, like you can't hook your feet in the rope or whatever to give you an advantage. But that's it. So it's simple and it's easy and. Yeah, so it's one of them things that I like it because there's not too much other plays into it. And then it's a judge sport. You know, once you do make the 8 seconds, it falls into, you know, there's 50 points awarded for the bull on how hard he bucks, kicks, spins, you know, how hard he is to ride, and 50 points for me on basically how well I sit up, you know, as long as I don't hang off the side and look real bad. And once we start getting them scores in the 90s, you know, that's pretty exceptional. Like, you know, them 90 scores come out, probably 1% of all bull rides. And there's been a perfect score one time, but it was a screw up. It never should have been. It's one of them things that, you know, in this world, there's probably no such thing as a perfect bull ride.
Yeah. And I guess when you have judges, you know, you get a lot of human bias that comes into play and certain people looking at different things in different ways, right? When they're scoring it.
Absolutely. You know, and just like you said, it's no different than judging the Olympics or something. There's always going to be controversy and somebody thought that was better and somebody
right.
thought this. But, you know, it's funny. We talk about it lots and the young kids get mad at me because I know for a fact that, you know, today I make the exact same ride that I made 15 years ago and I'm 2-3 points higher now than I was 15 years ago.
Oh.
And they, you know, and they kind of get a little bit upset. And I said, well, it's like that in anything. I guess you pay your dues and you become well known and they come a little bit easier. But with that being said, that's what's so good about this sport is you still got to stay on, and the best guys in the world still only stay on 50% of the time. So we lose 50% of the time too.
Right. So talk a little bit about your Olympic run. I wasn't even aware that bull riding was an Olympic sport until I saw your biography. How did that come about and what was that experience like?
Well, that was a pretty unique experience. So the rodeo is not actually an Olympic sport. What it was in Salt Lake in 2002 when the Olympics were there. They put on different what they called cultural events.
Okay.
So they brought in rodeo, just like in 1988 they had it at Calgary, and then again in 2002 they had it in Salt Lake. So they brought different teams in, and actually it was just Canada, the States, and Australia put a team in there too. And, you know, we brought five different guys in each event, and yeah, it was pretty neat. We got the opportunity to go around and meet all the other athletes, and we put on, it was more of a demonstration than anything, but they right. still handed out medals and all that. So it was something, it was really interesting to get a chance to be around them other high class athletes and intense in that, to just kind of see how we compared in that. And, I think what we did is, we really surprised a lot of them other athletes in how hard they work and how hard we train, or they train, versus how hard we work and how hard we train, but yet we're all right to go having a beer afterwards and quite as serious.
Is that not something the other Olympic athletes would do?
Not so much. Not the night before they were going to compete. That's for sure. And but you know, that's, we just we're out to have fun, and we're entertainers, and we like to have a good time. And you know, not saying we're out partying all the time, but sure. life's too short to take everything too serious, that's for sure.
Of course. And I guess it brings a lot of exposure to the sport as well when you're able to do something like that.
It does, you know, especially there. And you know, it opens up the whole, our whole sport to a new crowd that's not familiar. Because, you know, we're the good old boys, and the old country people are all our fans. And that's, anytime we can open it up to that new world and that more, you know, extreme sport and the younger version of people, it's awesome.
That's great. So talk a little bit as well about the training. What sort of training do you have to do to prepare to get on a bull? And do the bulls go through training as well, or how does that work?
Well, it's really changed over the years, you know, and I'm one of the few guys that can say this for how long I've been around is, you know, when you're younger and that, we're traveling and we're getting on, and the biggest issue with us is we're sore and injured a lot of the time. So training becomes a challenge, right? Because you're always trying to protect something that's injured and that, but we still do it. And now my training is very heavily on cardio. We'd go to the gym and that, but we're not big into lifting weights and that, you know, the PX90 stuff and that. We do a lot of stuff like that, right? Cause it's all about staying, you know, limber and moving around and just being able to handle our own body weight. But we always have to adapt to something that's sore, something that this and that. So it's a little different that way. And it definitely has progressed. Bull riding has become a long ways where guys now actually do treat themselves as athletes and go, where years ago they didn't. We just went and got on and got in a vehicle and went to the next one and had a beer and got on the next one and away you went, right? So it's right. it's evolved and it's got way more professional, which is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason it's come that far is, you asked too about the bulls and that. Well, the bulls have dramatically changed so quick in the last 10 years, especially because it's turned into a multi-million dollar business. Bucking bulls are trading for just like racehorses now. There's a bucking bull that a year and a half ago, they turned down half interest, 50% shares of him, and they turned down $2.5 million for him, right?
Wow.
Which is unbelievable to me. But them bulls now are all on, they're on special diets, they're on exercise programs and that. So they're athletes within themselves, but they've surpassed us as bull riders so quick because they've modified everything with, you know, different types of AI and different cows and embryo transfers. And within 3 years, they can build a pretty amazing bucking bull where it takes 18 years to build a pretty exceptional bull rider. And we don't really build them the same as we build the bulls. Like they just, that's what they're to be. And we still try for everybody else to just be regular people. Right. So it's a neat industry that way.
So is there's actual, like, kind of, you could say, genetic manipulation of the bulls themselves? Like they're actually created to be bucking bulls for the competition.
Exactly. It's just exactly like the racehorse industry, you know, it's just right. like that. It's, you know, what they've done is they're not, I wouldn't say like modifying them, you know, taking this and that, but they're taking semen from the best bull and putting it in the best cow and definitely controlling what offspring is coming out. Right.
Right.
And then when they find a great mix, what they can do is they can take one cow and they, what they call flusher, and get 10, 12 embryos. and then put that semen in there so they can get a crop of 15 to 20, you know, calves, all identical, all full brothers and sisters out of one cow within 1 year. So that really pushes the envelope on now how quick they can produce great animals.
So are the bulls these days, would it be safe to say, like, more intense to ride than they would have been 10 years ago?
Yeah, you know, the great bulls from 10 years ago were still great bulls. They'd still be great bulls today. It's just now 90% of them are great, where back then 10% of them were great, right? And they are. They're getting better, and they're just treating them like they're on better feed programs and exercise programs. And when you start exercising a 1,600-pound animal and put him on great feed, the advantage goes to his side pretty quick on what he can do, right?
Right. So what's the actual technique when you're on a bull? Like, you're in competition, or let's say somebody's, you're talking to a fellow bull rider, somebody who's starting out, like maybe a kid starting out, and he's asking you, what's the technique? How do I stay on the bull for 8 seconds? What would you tell them?
You know, we do a lot of different schools throughout the year and training camps and that. We try to help these kids. And the biggest thing is they have to want it before we can even teach them anything, because it's a life or death sport. It's not one of them things where I can put lots of pads on you and shoot a puck at you and keep you very relatively safe. We try right. hard to keep everybody safe. But so the biggest thing is they have to want to do it. And then there's basics. And we just go from almost riding a horse bareback to just teaching balance up and down. And then from there, it's just a progression of the more you've been on, then there's stuff. When a bull's front end comes up, you got to, what we call post, move out over the front end. And when they kick, you got to sit down. And there's a lot more to it than just, you know, the crazy guy in the bar that just thinks he can jump on and ride that thing. But
yeah,
there's a lot more to it, but it's, I don't know. It's just one of them things that it's awesome to deal with kids, because as I'm sure you're aware of, a 10-year-old kid can learn something in 5 minutes that takes me and you all day, right?
Yeah.
So it's awesome dealing with kids on stuff like that.
And so do you use a simulation, like those bucking bull kind of machines that they have? Do you use those before somebody gets on an actual live animal?
We've started to use a little bit more, because the one thing is there hasn't been one invented yet that is actual, a true simulation to what
we're doing. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the neat thing is that we do use a lot of them for is to just sit and put them on there, figure out shoot procedure and that, and just get the basics of how to sit and square and that. So we do start to use a lot of them and different things like that for sure.
So when is it that somebody first gets on their first live bucking bull, and like about where in their training would that happen?
You know, it depends what their background is. If they've rode lots of horses, if they rode steers, like, you know, at a younger age and that, they're farther ahead. But we don't really like to put too many people on a bull until they're at least 15.
Right.
And even at that age, it's very hand selected. We like to really hand select the ones that have been around a long time and are pretty, what we call beginner bulls and that. And the biggest thing with that, though, is in this sport, confidence is everything. If you take away their confidence at a young age, you've lost them. They'll never come back, because,
right,
like I said, the opportunity for injury is so high that it's we actually try to, on a lot of these kids, we try to make them believe they're way better than they are and hold them back. They always want to get on better and better, and we just keep them thinking they're that good and try to hold them back. And eventually then everything catches up, where if you get them to think they're that good and then put them on that good one, you're going to iron them out and they leave. And not only do they leave and take all their friends with them and their mom and dad and everybody, and they think this is a really stupid sport. So we work very hard at trying to keep everybody in check growing up and keep them confident until they're ready to go.
So would you say confidence is one of the key aspects to being able to be a successful bull rider?
Confidence is everything. It's, you know, confidence and mental state. Anybody that's ever successful, it's everything. And people will do that different. I'm not a big fan of confident people that will always want to tell me how good they are, because my dad told me at a young age, he says, if you're that good, you don't need to talk about yourself. Other people are already doing it for you.
That's a very good point. And if you have to talk about it all the time, maybe you're actually not that confident, right?
Well, and I believe that. You know, I traveled with a couple different guys, and one guy, he was that confident, but he had to tell people, and everybody had to believe it. But the other people that I've been around that are usually talking how confident are, deep down, they're scared to death, and they're not very confident at all.
Right. So when you're in the chute and the gate's about to open and the bull's about to go out, are you nervous at all? Does that freak you out? And the first time you ever did it in competition, do you remember your thought process at that time?
Well, like I say, it's changed a lot. Probably now where I'm at in my, that's probably the calmest point in my life right now is right before I'm to nod my head. It's just, it's one of them things, I've done it so many times.
Yeah.
But when I first started, I wasn't confident. I was scared to death. You know, it was just one of them things. And the first probably 30 bulls that I nodded my head on, I couldn't even tell you what happened. Like it wasn't, everything was just a blur and that. But then as you go, that scared turns into excitement, and then that excitement turns into competition. And now, you know, I've went from scared to nod my head to now I'm scared of losing. That's the difference over the years, right? You know, so there's a million emotions go through, and now the emotions really change on the scale or the spectrum we're in, right? If I'm getting on a bull at a little rodeo close to home or something, you know, I'm not super excited or my adrenaline's not that high, but when I'm putting my hand in the rope in the final four at Calgary for $100,000, I still manage to get pretty excited over stuff like that, right?
So. Right. And you were actually here in Vancouver a while back at the Cloverdale Rodeo where you won the whole thing. You won the bull riding competition. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how that was like.
Yeah, it's been good. We used to come out to Surrey there for the rodeo for years and years, and I took a little hiatus from it. I hadn't been out for a few years, and I come back last year, and then I come back this year, and it's they just have a rough stock event there with barrel racing, so there's just the bareback riding, the bronc riding, and the bull riding, and they take 16 of us. There's 8 of us in 2 different pools, and you kind of ride, and then the top 4 come out of them pools, and to Monday to a showdown, and there's top 8 there, and there's $45,000 up in that short round the last day, and geez, they bucked everybody off except for me, so it was pretty good. So they handed me a check for $45,000, and it's that's one of the situations that I really like is, you know, coming down to the end of it, actually they bucked us all off. I guess I lied there. They bucked us all off, and then the top 2 had to come back, Wasey and I, because we were the winners of each of our pool. And anymore at my age, those are the situations that I crave and that I love. And some people, you know, the nerves get to them on that. And that's what, when I seem to rise to the occasion, because Wasey'd already went and all I had to do was stay on, and they give me all that money. And that's always easier said than done. That's all you have to do is stay on. And usually when all you have to do is stay on, that's when you get bucked off as quick as possible.
Right.
It was one of them deals, and I love situations like that. So it worked out really well.
So would you say a love of that sort of competition, you really have to be a competitive person and to get excited about that sort of situation to be successful in the sport?
You do. You know, to be really successful, you have to, in this deal, you have to thrive on pressure. Pressure has to be something that you like, and you can turn it into something that you can win with. And like I said, I've watched those guys that got way more talent than me or the best guys in the world, and they can't handle that mental stress that comes on it, because not only do you know, it's like dropping the puck at center ice and going down, and all you have to do is score to win the Stanley Cup. Well, that pressure, the guys that are on the top, they're gonna thrive on it. And they're the guys that go, give me the puck, I want to do it.
Right.
And that's the other guys that don't, they want to watch somebody else do it but still get the ring for winning the cup, right? And that's what separates the difference, right?
Yeah,
I've been pretty fortunate in my life that I love those situations. But what I give the credit to is I've always worked very hard in my whole life to, I surround myself with people that are better than me. And people always go, oh, you're pretty good. And I said, yeah, but I said, I'm always, and it doesn't matter what it is, if it's bull riding here at the ranch, my wife, everybody, them people are actually better than me. And I've put myself in that situation. So I only have one opportunity, and that's, I have to try to keep up with them, or I'm the loser, right? And I don't want to be a loser. So I always find a way to put myself around people that are great. And you have to keep up, because one winner can't bring 10 losers up.
Right.
10 losers will drag that winner down every time. So just winners got to be with winners. That's how it goes.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think that plays a part in a lot of different sports. I mean, we interviewed a mixed martial arts fighter as well, and I think it's a lot of the same thing there, whereas if you're a fighter, you want to train at a gym that has champions, that has people who are way, way better than you. So when you get in there in the cage or the ring and you're sparring with those people, you know, they're going to beat your ass for the first however many times, but you're going to naturally get better because of that.
That's right. And, you know, put in a scenario, I've been around other guys that they're the top dog. And so what they do is they always surround themselves with them guys that are just below them. And then that way they think they're the winner in that, but they've reached their peak. They're never going to get better. Where if you surround yourself with guys that are better than you, you have to keep getting better. And I'm 37 years old and I'm a firm believer that I'm still trying to get better. The day that I think I'm as good as I'll ever get, I better quit, because what's the point in a sport like this, right? It's just like martial arts. You know, if you don't think you're getting any better, you should quit, because like you said, you're going to get your ass beat down real quick.
Yeah, because there's always going to be somebody coming up that's going to be hungrier and going to be working harder if they think they're going to be able to get better.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to touch on something very interesting I found in your biography, which is that you've traveled to China a couple times now with the Canadian government on, it was some sort of trade agreement. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but I'm really fascinated by that. And it mentioned that the Chinese wanted to see like a real Canadian cowboy, so they invited you down.
Yeah, it was a very unique opportunity and one of the coolest things I've ever done. So I got this phone call one day and it was all being lined up through the Calgary Stampede and their travel agency and all that. And they asked me if I'd like to go over to China on a trades mission. And what it was at that time, Canada just announced that they would give anybody in China a 2-week travel visa to come to Canada to see everything in that. And it just so happened it fell on the 100th anniversary of the Calgary Stampede. So, and they wanted to see a cowboy in that. So I actually got a chance to go over there with Stephen Harper at the time and everybody involved with him. And so we went over there for 5 days and we just toured around and announced that Canada was now a first destination for China for tourism to come over and just really supporting Canada. And in return, with Calgary Stampede being the 100th anniversary, it was a great fit to get everybody to come over for the rodeo and that. So I got an opportunity to go over there. I'm very confident in saying, walking around with my cowboy hat and I honestly don't walk around I have a cowboy hat on all the time, but I don't walk around in my chaps and that all the time. But in China, I did a lot just to play the role in that. And I probably got my picture taken somewhere between 1 million and 2 million times. But it was awesome. I got to go and see the Great Wall of China. I've never been treated better in my whole life than I was, that first. It did help that I was with the Prime Minister of Canada and under security and, you know, had all the perks and that. But, you know, they enjoyed it so much and a bunch of travel agencies over there and that. I got home and a week later they called and asked if I'd come back again. So we were home for about 10 days, and that next time I flew over, and my wife Brandy and I got to go that time, and we flew over again, and same thing, they just rolled out the red carpet for us, and we got to tour around and visit everybody, and it's something that, you know, everybody over there called me John Wayne, right? Because they've watched enough Westerns and TV, and they understand it, and the cowboy and the Western heritage is pretty mesmerizing for them over there, right? So
yeah.
So it's pretty neat. I got a opportunity to kind of show and explain what I do to the best that we could with a little bit of language barrier, and they got to introduce me to a lot of their culture, and, you know, I got to go up on the Great Wall of China and Tiananmen Square and all that, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I used to live in Beijing actually for a year and a half, so I can kind of speak to that. They do have a lot of warmth for foreigners going over there, and they are very curious about different cultures and stuff like that. So that's really awesome.
It was great.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, what do you think are the main tools? We talked about confidence. We talked about being hungry for competition. What other things do you think a professional bull rider needs? If you were to talk to somebody who really wanted to get into the sport, you got to really want it. You got to be confident. You got to have a love for competition. Is there anything else you would tell them?
You know, those are definitely the main things, but I think the biggest thing is in anything, you got to, at this sport, just because of the danger factor in that, you have to just dig deep and realize if you're willing to sacrifice. Like, it depends how good you want to be. If you want to be the best there is in professional, you have to be willing to sacrifice everything you've got, because, you know, I missed my own high school graduation that people talk about forever later on in life, because I was at a rodeo and that's what I wanted. And I've sacrificed, you know, I've sacrificed some of my kids' birthdays and all that because I've been gone. And so if you're not willing to sacrifice that, don't be disappointed that you don't achieve what you dream you're going to in your mind. So you just have to be willing to, you know, put all them other things, competition, all that, which, you know, but if you're not willing to just to give it all you got and sacrifice the, you know, I missed ski trips and I missed all that with my buddies and that because I was at some rodeo somewhere. And those are life choices you have to make. And yeah, excuse me, you just have to be willing to decide if that's what you want to do or not.
Well, that's amazing. You've given tons of insight today. Thanks so much for joining us. Is there anywhere people can find you online? Do you want to shout out any sponsors you have or any parting words?
You know, the big thing is I'm trying to be on social media a little bit. I'm usually on Twitter and Instagram. So if everybody wants to check out things there, I usually put on some rides and that. And my sponsors, you know, I can't say enough about them. I'm very good to try to always tag them in on my social media. So instead of listing them all here, you know, like obviously there's ATB and Kubota and Tractorland and Wrangler and those guys. But just give me a follow on Twitter, Instagram, and then go ahead and give all them other sponsors that I got a follow because I know they appreciate it and I appreciate them.
Great. Well, we'll put links to that in the description underneath this video so that people can click and follow you on social media.
Sounds good. Well, I appreciate it. It's been fun talking to you.
Okay, great, Scott. Thank you so much and you have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Neil.
So there was Scott Schiffner, professional bull rider with some amazing insights into the world of rodeo sports. Now, we are an audio and video podcast. You can find us on YouTube and iTunes and everywhere where podcasts can be found online. We'd really appreciate it if whatever platform you are watching us on, you do give us a rating, a like, and a comment about the show. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, you can find us at highstakessuccess.com. So stay tuned next time for another amazing guest. And remember, when the stakes are high, success is the only option.